We're starting here on the bottom, 11th Bavli, three lines up from the bottom. It says, Tarabanan, Yodcha, Zu, small. When it talks about Yodcha, that's the left arm, and that's where you place the tefillin. A Talmer, small, and what do you mean? How do you know it's whether it's the left hand or the right arm? Talmer, Lomar. So we're now going to bring three psukim over here. The three psukim are all going to be the same, which is that they're going to use the term Yad, and then they're going to use the term Yamin. And the underlying assumption of the Gemara is that, well, if Yad and Yamin are mentioned in the same pasuk, that means that Yad is not Yamin. Yad must be small. Now, truthfully, just from a literary standpoint and from a literary style, poetic style, the writing you'll see in each of these cases, there are two phrases that are mentioned, and they change the one from Yad to Yamin. So generally, when we do that, that is a style that means that they're usually synonymous and not the opposite. But the Gemara is not going to take the pasuk very literally. And because it takes it very literally, it's going to say, well, if you used Yad here and Yamin there, it means Yad must be small. And that is the first one they bring from Yishayahu, which is, Ach, Yadi, Yasda Aretz. My hand, my arm, established, founded the earth. Vimini, Tibcha Shamayim. And my right arm stretched out the skies and placed the heavens above. So you see from the fact that Hashem says that Yadi is about Aretz, and Yamini about Shemayim, that the Yamin to the Aretz means Yad must be small, must be the left arm. Gomer, and it says by Yael, when they Shirat Devorah, when they laud Yael for what she did in killing Sisera, it says Yadali Ateida Tishalachna, that she outstretched her arm, she grabbed the tent peg with her arm, Viminar, in her right arm, the Halmut Amelim, to destroy those that were tired, to take out those that were tired, Sisera who came to her, she was tired, pulled aside there. So Yamina, again, opposite Yada. So Yada must be small if Yamina is her right. Vilmer, and the last one is from Tehillim, on the question of Hashem, why are you allowing your Mikdash to be destroyed? Why are you allowing everything to be ruined? It says, Lama Toshiv Yadcha, why did you pull back your arm? Viminecha Mikerv Checha Kalei, and you took out your Yimincha from your, taken out of your Chek. Kalei is done. So again, the use of Yadcha versus Yiminecha shows you that Yadcha must be small. So from this, the Gemara wants to prove that when we're talking about the tefillin being put on the Yad, that means on the left arm. Rabbi Yossi Achoreim Omer. Rabbi Yossi Achoreim. What the Achoreim means here? Rashi says Achoreim is from the Mumim that are mentioned in Bechorot. It means that Chotmo Mushuka, that his nose was pressed into his face, that he had a depressed nose. So that's in Mum, in Bechorot, and they call him Yossi Achoreim. Talks to John, says, how could it be? How could it be? That his nickname, or the way they referred to him, was about a feature on him that was a Mum, and something that was derogatory? How could they call him Rabbi Yossi Achoreim? That's a derogatory term. It says, rather, Achoreim must be Makom, must be the place that he came from. He doesn't accept the explanation that they would have given him a name, or a description that was negative, in a sense, that it described a Mum in him, and therefore he believes that Achoreim must be a place. So Rabbi Yossi Achoreim, Omer Matziru Yamin, Shinikra Yad. We have a place where Yamin is called Yad. Meaning that as opposed to these examples where Yamin is opposite Yad, therefore Yamin means the right arm and Yad means the small, over here we're going to see that Yad over here means Yamin. Which is, he brings from the case where Yaakov is giving the bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, and over there Yosef says, Shinemar Vayar Yosef ki Yashit Aviv Yad Yamino. So over there it says his father put his Yad Yamino. So you see there that Yad is referring to the right arm. So now the answer is going to be obvious, which is that it says Yad Yamino. It redefines Yad as Yamino. Now, truthfully, that could be a proof the other way around. If you say Yad Yamino, we did this before, a Bana Avs that you have, if the Torah has got a way to say Yamino by Yad, it means that Yad Stam is probably small. And true, it could be true that Yad is ambiguous. And therefore you need either Yamino or Smolo to define it. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that it really means left, and Yamino here comes to modify it. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi Achoreim views it the other way around. It says Yad Yamino means Yad must be the right side. The Idach, those that quote or don't agree with that, they didn't bring this as the example. What are they going to say? Yad Yamino Ikre, Yad Stam Alo Ikre. It's called Yad Yamino, true. That's a noun phrase, Yad Yamino, his right arm. But Yad Stam Alo, if it just says Yad, that doesn't necessarily refer to the right, but rather to the left. Rabbi Natan Omer Eino Tzarich, we don't need any of these. Harehu Omer, it says Ukshartam Uchtavtam. It says there's a juxtaposition in the Torah between the parshiot of Tefillin and the parshiot of Mezuzah. Maktiva b'yamin, just like the writing is with the right arm, afshira b'yamin, so too the nodding to be done with the right hand. So just like the verb by the ketivat ha-mezuzah is done with the right arm, how do you know that? So Rashi says, because rov bnei adam kotvim biyamin, most people write with their right hand. So since most people write with their right hand, therefore ketivat mezuzah, the verb, the active verb there, must be done with your right hand. So the juxtaposition teaches us that just like the verb ketivah is done with the right hand, so too the verb shira is done with the right hand. But if you're doing a kesher with your right hand, the placement of the tefillin must be on the left side, because you can only do knotting or tie tight with your right hand if you're putting it on your right arm, a left arm. But if you're placing it on your right arm, you couldn't do it with your right hand. So the indication came in the kshir b'yamin anocha mismolhi. Obviously, you can see already, since there is no source brought for the fact that ketivat mezuzah is done by yamin, the reason that you write with your right hand when it comes to the mezuzah is because that's what people do, that have implications for people who do not write with their right hand, but rather write with their left hand. So we'll get to that in 1 second. Rabbi Yossi achoreim hanachat ismol minolei. Rabbi Yossi achoreim, who thinks that yad means right, where does he know that you put it on your left hand? He says, he learns it out from the same place. He learns it out from the same place that Rabbi Natan learned it out. And that is from the juxtaposition of ketivat mezuzah to kshirat tefillin. Rashi amar miyadcha. He learned it out of yadcha by the parsha vayakiv yadcha that is written by tefillin. A term yadcha is written with a hay in it. Should be written yadcha without the hay at the end. The fact that it has the hay at the end comes to teach you something. Ketiv hay keha comes to teach us that means your weak arm. Now there are two ways to learn it. Either it's a contraction of yad keha, that's why it says yadcha. Rashi brings an alternative pshat, which is yadcha is a female conjugation, and since it's the hey is an indication of a female conjugation, then it talks about the female, which is weaker than the male, so that also means the weaker arm. So from yadcha, you will know to do it with the weaker arm. So amalei Rabbi Abba the Ravashi, ve'ema yadcha shibekoach. How do you know that yadcha there means yad kehad? Let's say it's yad shibakoach. So amalei mikti bechet. Does it really say a chet there? Now that would accord better with the position or the explanation that talking about a contraction over here. Yad keha contracts the yadcha with a hey at the end. If you want to say yad koach and you want to contract those two, it should have yad kach or something like that. It should have a chet at the end in order to indicate that it's a contraction. So we would say yad keha, not yad koach, because of the way it's written with the hey. Kitznai. Turns out that it is a machlok tanaim about how to view this yadcha with the hay. So the first one, yadcha behay zusmo. That's like we just learned now, that means yad keha means the left arm. Acherim omrim yadcha l'rabote tegidein. Yadcha comes to include a gidein, someone who has an amputee, someone who's missing a part of their arm. Now again, they can't be missing their entire arm, because otherwise they could put on tefillin, but they're missing the part from the elbow down, they're missing the forearm, but they can still put on tefillin on the upper part of the arm. So yadcha comes to be mirabe gidein. Tanya yidoch, we have another bright day, lecha zroa patur min tefillin. If the person has no arm, they're patur min tefillin. Acherim yadcha the rabot et hagidein. Again, yadcha the rabot et hagidein. Someone who has no arm is patur from a tefillin. Acherim yadcha the rabot et hagidein. That the yadcha comes to me rabbi gidein. Again, the difference between if he has no zroa, if he has no arm whatsoever, then he'll be patur min tefillin. On the other hand, if he has a arm, but missing the forearm, it will be chayav. But whoever uses yadcha to come to include a gidein, obviously does not use yadcha to come teach us about yad keha. So that'd be the machlokas that we see in Tanaim, whether yadcha is actually to mean yad keha, or yadcha is coming to be merabe a gidein to put on a tefillin. So now we get to the question which is going to come up from the two limudim. We have two limudim, basically two basic sources for the fact that one puts on tefillin in the left hand. One is the hekesh, the juxtaposition of ketivat mezuzah to anachat tefillin, kshirat tefillin. And just like the ketivah is done with the right, so too the kesher tefillin or kshirat tefillin is done with the right. The other one is yad keha, goes after the weaker arm. Yad keha, so whichever one is the weaker arm. Both of those would indicate to put the tefillin on the left side. So natar rabana itar yad, someone who's a lefty, meniach tefillin b'yimino, he puts his tefillin on his right arm, shu smolo, because that's his left hand. If it goes after, again, could do the same thing. If the ketivah, a lefty, writes with their left hand, Therefore, the verb shira would also be done with their left hand. If they're doing shira with the left hand, it must be that the tefillin are placed on their right arm. Again, yad keha, a lefty has a stronger left arm. If they have a stronger left arm, they're going to put the yad keha, it's going to be their right side, and they'll place the tefillin on the right side. V'atanya, don't we have a bright daminiach b'smalo, shu'smalo shu'kol adam. It says about a lefty that he should place it on the left arm, just like everybody else does. And Rabbi, k'dani ahi. That is said about a shalei b'shnei adam. That's someone who is ambidextrous. Somebody who's ambidextrous, in that situation, they should place it on like a righty. They should default to do it like Rov B'nei Adam. They should place it on with a righty. The Mishnah Berurah brings down, the Poskim bring down, that that's only true if a person is truly ambidextrous. If they are better with one arm, they're more miyuman, they are more dexterous with one arm, and the other one they've trained themselves to be, but it's not as good, that's not called Shalei B'shtei Adam. Shalei B'shtei Adam, when you have equal dexterity in both arms, you can do exactly the same thing in both arms. But if you have favor one arm, and the other one you can do it, or it's a little sloppy, or it's not as nice, then you go along with the arm that you normally do, or the natural arm that is more dexterous. When it's exactly equal, then ambidextrous, then you put it on like Rov B'nei Adam, you put it on like a righty. Now the question that comes up, and Tosfos raises the question right here, is what happens if there's a clash between the two limudim? What happens if there's a clash between Yad Keha and Yad Ktiba? And Tosfos raises the issue in Mak Ktiba B'yamin Afshira B'yamin. What happens if a person writes with his right arm, but he does all his activities with his left hand? Which side should he put on? Which arm should he put on the tefillin? Should he put it on based on ktiva? Based on ktiva, he writes with his right hand. That means he can do shira with his right hand, he'll put on his left arm. If you go after Yad Keha, his left arm is the one he does most of the activities with. That's the stronger arm. Yad Keha is the right arm. You have to put on his right arm. He doesn't know what to do. So maybe we should compare him to an ambidextrous. An ambidextrous individual puts it on like Rov B'nei Adam. So maybe also over here. If you have a stira between, or a contradiction, or a conflict between the two limudim, go after Rov B'nei Adam and put it on like a righty. That's Tosa's suggestion. It turns out to be a machalokas between the Gra and the Ramah. The Ramah paskins that when it comes to what dictates over here, if you have a conflict or a clash between these two limudim, what dictates is Yad Ktiba. Whichever arm that you write with, that's the determining factor. That juxtaposition of the Paradiyot of Ktiba and Suzah and Ukshartem of the Parsha of Tfilin, that is what dictates. And therefore, when you have a clash, conflict between the two limudim, go after Yad Ktiba. Therefore, someone who writes with their left hand, but does the activities or the right arm is stronger, they'll put on tefillin like a lefty. On the other hand, the Gra says, no, Yad Keha is the Ikar. The weaker arm is the Ikar Limud. And since that's the Ikar Limud, when you have a clash between the writing arm being the left arm and the stronger arm being the right arm, you go after the right arm, because that's the stronger arm, and you put on tefillin on your left, which is the Yad Keha. So the Gra favors Yad Keha, and the Ramah favors Yad Ktiva. Now this is as a lach of the ma'aseh, because most lefties are not pure lefties. So for many lefties, this question comes up, because many lefties write with the left hand, but do numerous things with their right arm. And because of that, you have a safek here that comes up in the psak halacha between the Gra and the Ramah. So people, for instance, who have right with their left arms and are stronger in their right side, or right with their left arms and do many activities with their right arms, have this safek. Whether to go, if we pass on like the Ramah, it goes after Yad Ktiba, which is generally the accepted approach, versus if do we go by the Gra, it says Yad Keha. Some people have a bigger suffix than others, but it's definitely something that should be asked about Shilat Rav. So now the Gemara is going to talk about the placement of the Tefillin Shel Yad and the Tefillin Shel Rosh. About the Tefillin Shel Yad, it says, Tana Debe Miasha Yadcha Zuki Boret. Yadcha is the Kiboret, and Ben Enecha Zukat Kod. Between your eyes is the cut code. Hey, where is that located? I'm right to be Rabbi Yannai, Makom Shemokho Shaltinokro face. In the soft part of the skull, where when a baby is born, that place is yet to harden, and that place is very soft. That's the location of the tefillin. So let's go back and discuss the, what that means. What is the kiboret? So Rashi says that the kiboret is Bajron. And Tosfos says about that, he says, Perishikosh Bajron, the kiboret hu lashon kvutzat basar. It's a lump of muscle, it's a collection of flesh. That's what we're referring to when we're talking about a kiboret. Kimo, kiboret ahimi. V'omer Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam comes and explains to us where that location is. What's amazing is that he's coming to go against people who think otherwise and what they think. Let's see this. Rabbeinu Tam. Dugoba basar, it's the peak of the elevation of the muscle or of the flesh, shibizroa, on the arm, shibben beta shechi, between the underarm, meaning the shoulder, or the marpeik, and the elbow, shikorin koda. Lo kidivrei refreshim, but not like those that explain that the gova basar that we're talking about here, the muscle, the lump that we're talking about over here, is shibba'ota etzim ben ayada marpeik, is between the hand, the wrist, and the elbow, meaning that they're referring to the forearm. That's the only muscle that really extends over there, that they were people believed that the kiboret was the forearm. And the Rebbeinu Tam says, what are you talking about? It can't be that that's the forearm. No. That the area that we're talking about here is the bicep. Everybody says the mitzvah tefillin is in the zroa. The zroa is between the elbow and the shoulder, whereas the yad is between the elbow and the wrist. So over everywhere it says zroa, and we're talking about tefillin, it must be that it's up on the bicep area. Now the Ritosis goes through numbers of proofs and disproofs to this proposition, as explained them. One of the biggest proofs for the Tosafot and the Rebbeinu Tam is later on in today's daf. And later on in today's daf, it says that the tefillin should be placed keneged alev, opposite the heart. And the Rebbeinu Tam points out that if you place the tefillin on the forearm, if you were to stand up straight and extend your arms parallel to your body, your forearm would be below the area of your heart. What would be opposite your heart? Opposite your heart would be your bicep. So that would be the proper location of the tefillin, not down on the forearm. The forearm is too low to be opposite the neged alev. So based on that, the Rebbeinu Tam says that the kiboret is the bicep. Now once we know that, we have a machloket about where on the bicep one should place the tefillin. The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both paskin that one should place the tefillin on the elevation of the bicep. Now if you look at it, I have these pictures here, I've sent them out to you. The arm between the elbow and the shoulder can be divided up into four components, four parts. There's the part between the elbow and the beginning of the bicep. That's part one. The next part is from the beginning of the bicep to the peak of the bicep. That's part two. Then it's from the peak elevation of the bicep to the decline, the bicep ends. And then there is the area between the end of the bicep and the shoulder. Those are the four locations along the arm between the elbow and the shoulder. What we do know for sure is that the location between the elbow and the bicep is no good to put the tefillin on. That front part between the elbow and the bicep can't put tefillin. We also know the other way around. From the shoulder down to the end of the bicep, everybody agrees that that's not the location for tefillin. So as far as those two component parts, those areas are not good for tefillin. The middle area that's on the bicep, that's where we have the machloket. The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both say that it should be on the incline of the bicep. That means from the front end of the bicep, from the beginning, from the starting from the elbow, when the bicep starts to elevate to the peak of the bicep, that front area, that's where the tefillin should be placed. One of the ways to see that, and one of the ways to check that, is to take two etzba'ot, two fingers, and place them where the bend of your elbow is. If you place two fingers there, by the bend of the elbow, that will feel, if you bend your arm, you can feel like your bicep starts at that point in time. Your tefillin, the entire box of the tefillin has to be behind that, above those two fingers, in order to be on the bicep. Now, where should it end? If you look at the bone that extends between the elbow and the shoulder, the midpoint of that bone is where the bicep peaks. So the midpoint of that bone. So the location for the tefillin, according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, are two etzba'ot off the elbow, the bend of the elbow, that's where the bicep begins, till the peak of the bicep, which is the midpoint of the bone between the shoulder and the elbow. So most people actually put on their tefillin too high up. They should really lower them. Not within. You have to make sure they're too high to go off the elbow, but you need to lower them down because most people put on their tefillin very much higher up. Now the Gro disagrees, and the Gro thinks that the entire kiboret is kosher. The entire bicep is kosher. Meaning from the beginning of the incline of the bicep to all the way to the end of the decline of the bicep. So he doubles the area where you can place the tefillin according to the Gro. So therefore, if you set the tchak, if necessary, you can go up a little higher for the grub. So the answer, or where you should place your tefillin, is to make sure your tefillin, the entire box is above the 2x by the elbow. And you should have it end, the box hopefully should end by the midpoint of the bicep, but if it goes over a little bit, at least you have the grub to be so much on in terms of placement of the tefillin. Now, when it comes to the tefillin shell rosh, and again, later on we'll come back to the shayat to discuss the keneged alev and the kesher shel yud. Now, when it comes to the tefillin shel rosh, here we said that it has to be v'kodkod ben einecha, the place that's soft part of the skull. So in order to see where that is, if you actually, a good way to do it is to take your hand and put it in by the front of your ear, front of your earlobe, and you run it straight up your head, that'll tell you where the end of the soft area is on the head. The front of the soft area will be around your hairline. Now your hairline, not necessarily your present hairline, but the hairline that you were born with. So if you can see, if you're holding your hands in those two locations, you can see, first of all, there's a pretty large area where you can put your tefillin, and it's shifted further back than most people would assume. That's a mistake, a very big mistake with tefillin. Most people wear their tefillin too far forward. The entire box of the tefillin must be behind your hairline. And it should be even a little further back, because there is so much more room to go back. Then why risk being at the edge of the hairline if the tefillin move forward a little bit, then they're going to be problematic, they're going to be pasul. So you should place the tefillin further back. But that is also indicated, that's also helped by the fact that the Gemara says that a person has on their head the ability to put on two pairs of tefillin. Well, two pairs of tefillin, at least according to the Tosafot, two pairs of tefillin are one in front of the other. But one in front of the other, you can only do that because it's starting at your hairline and going back. That tells you that there's a lot of space behind you. The other part of the tefillin is ben enecha, that's between your eyes. So you place your hands vertically on your eyes, the inside of your eyes, then you hold them up and put them up, you'll see on your hairline where the tefillin should be, basically centered on your face. That we'll see is also a machlok, whether it has to be centered, because the machlok is about where you can put two tefillin shorosh, is whether it can be front to back, like Tosu says, but there are others that believe it can be side to side. The ben enecha, between your eyes, is enough space for two tefillin. And when it comes to, I heard from Meir Lichtenstein, the Shema's father, he didn't want to say the halacha, but that ben enecha would mean from the end of your eyes. Ben enecha would be that the tefillin not being between the inside of your eyes, but between the outside of your eyes. And that's how you could actually get two pairs of tefillin in. Ben enecha. So that brings us to the last halacha, whether one should look in a mirror to ensure that their tefillin are straight. And that is also machlokas in the Chubos and the Achronim, whether it's proper to look in a mirror to see that the tefillin are straight, or it's improper to look in the tefillin. That I brought down that the Rav Mibrisk did have a mirror, and that he did look at it to make sure that it was straight, but there are others that object to it, both from the perspective of getting involved, looking at oneself in the mirror, as well as it's not that it has to be perfectly straight. You have to get it basically along the line, and you can do that without a mirror. A person can be able to do that with their hands and have it get it straight, basically lining themselves up.
But there's nowhere that it says that it has to be centered, right? As long as it's between
ben enecha. The question is, what does ben enecha mean over here? So ben enecha,
the Lichtenstein really could be off.
Off center over there. Correct. Whereas the ben enecha, if you believe it's the inside of the eyes, really ben enecha, then ben enecha would force you to be centered. It would be right in the middle. Therefore, you can see here on the picture that the proper placement of the tefillin is up above the hairline, high above the hairline, all the way up to the top of the head, the peak of the head, where if you take your hand and line it up from the front of the earlobe to the top, you'll know where that back point is. Now, the other thing is the kesher shel tefillin. Said before, we learned that the kesher should be the mala. Some people, they actually say it's referring to the kesher shel tefillin shel rosh. Others will learn in the later half of today's daf that it refers to the kesher shel yud of the tefillin shel yad. But over here, what it means, the mala means that the kesher should be at the end of the bone of the skull. Many people put it too far down into the hole that's below that. That it should be at where the bone of the skull ends. It's somewhat near the end of your hairline in the back. It probably is a drop above the end of your hairline in the back. But around where your hairline in the end back goes up, and you put it on probably around two etzvot there, you'll also find the bone, the end of the bone of the skull. The kesher should be above that point, right there at that end of the bone. So again, when erring with the tefillin shel rosh, one should make it tighter rather than looser, because you want to get it further back than the hairline and have the kesher further up. Most people do not wear the tefillin in the right place. They end up wearing it too far down in the front, and the kesher too far down in the back. So from this, maybe just to be mechazik the rabbim, that over here that we should try to tighten up our sharim on the tefillin shel rosh, so the tefillah should be further back and the kesher should be further up.
Some people in shul, they'll walk over to people and just start playing with someone else's tefillin, correct? You don't have to do that.
So the reason that is because, let me read you a quote from Rav Kook. Right. V'atachinu b'sarinu, ki shofar arim koli. Raise my voice up like a shofar, b'kol mar tzoreach. Ki ra'a gdola anachno usim al nafshutena. This horrible thing that we're doing to ourselves. Hinei yesh b'yadeinu mitzvah adira b'chaviva, shakosh baruchu talab b'kvodo yitbarach l'kvodeinu. Hashem invested his kavod in it, in our kavod in it. V'hi owes lano, and it's our strength, and people are doing it wrong. And what was it that they were doing? He says that it was about, he wrote that about the makom hanachat tefillin shel rosh in a book called Chevesh HaPe'er, that the Rav Kook says that he had to be ma'orer to the tzibor to make sure that the tefillin shel rosh are in the right place, and that if the tefillin go down past the hairline or they're moving around, that they should make sure, people should make sure to pull the tefillin back and make sure that it's there. And he was very upset that we are many people, and it's true today till today, that many people wear the tefillin too far forward, and they're not in the makom where you'd say they didn't have tefillin, which is sad. The people put on tefillin every day to make sure that they have the tefillin put in the right place. General, probably in erring with tefillin shel rosh, which is a mistake, is they should be tighter than looser. Correct, the loop should be tighter than looser because you have more room to the back from in front, from the hairline back, and you have, as in the back, you want the knot to be up higher. So generally a principle that you probably want to tighten your shel rosh rather than loosen your shel rosh. Alright, so now we'll go on and then we'll come back to tefillin shel yad and the kesher shel yud over there. So, bar mine palimo mirabi. Mi sheyesh lo shnei roshim. Someone who has two heads. Ve'ezim mehem meniach tefillin. On which one of them should he put on tefillin? Amale, he says back to palimo, okum kali, bring in this two-headed person. Okival atcha shamta. Otherwise, you go into nidui. When you're making up questions like this, you bring up questions like this in the base medrash that are, you know, fantasy land, you're wasting our time. Either you bring in this double-headed person, or that's it, you're in shamta. Arahachi, in the interim, atahu gabra. A man comes in, amale, jalili yinoko, di leitre re. I just had a baby that had two heads. So come and be in on the meat of the Kohen. How much do I have to pay and pitch on a bend to the Kohen? So he says, Ata Usabo, an elderly man came in and Tanale, Chayab Yitain Lo, Yud Slaim. You have to give him 10. Two heads, two times you got to pay for the pigeon. Ini, is that really true? Vatani Rami Barcham, and we talk Shener Mar, Podot, Tifted, Bechor Adam, Shomeani, Avilu Nitrach, Betoch Lamed. I would think that even if he became a trefoil within 30 days, Tamad Omar, Ach, Chilek. Achilek says that if he's a treifah, you don't pay for the pigeon of Ben, because the treifah is not ra'ui to live. And therefore, since he's not ra'ui to live, it's not considered to be a bar kayama, and therefore there's no pigeon over here. So the Gemara says, no, hacha, to be gogolet, ta'ala, rachmana. Over here, pigeon b'chor is dependent on the heads. It's not dependent on the area of treifah, not treifah. It's solely dependent on the number of heads here. And since this individual has two heads, then in Ochanami, you're going to have to pay for two pigeonim, even though it has a classification of a treifa in this instance, because this is the key element, the key idea that is said by pigeon b'chor, which is the gulgolet, by the head count. So over here, since the head count is two, you're going to pay twice for it. Now Tosfos here makes an interesting point. He says, Bolama ze leko. He says, in this world, we have no such thing where people have two heads. If you have it with Siamese twins, it's the only time that you have it. But over there, obviously, it's a bigger issue about the Siamese twins, about that situation. But he says, Avayesh b'midrash. He says, the midrash has such a case, Shlomo HaMelech, that Ashmedai took out some individual like this that there was with Shnei Rashim. But the Siamese twins also, in that instance, there's the question about whether they're a treifah or not. So that's the same issue. If they're a treifah, can they really live? How long can they live and how long can they exist in that situation? They have two heads. And then on top of that, even if they are a treifah, maybe because they're two golgolot, they'll have to pay twice for the pigeon b'chor. They would have to pay because it's two heads, irrespective of the treifa aspect of it. So that might be in this situation. So hopefully, please God, that we don't have to, people don't have to experience that. But then that's this discussion. So now they asked about the tefillin. That was what his question was. Which head does he put the tefillin on over there? So it really be a question of how the classification of whether it's one or two individuals there, and how you define whether it's one or two.
The famous Siamese twins live this in their late in their adulthood.
Right.
Where they one had a right arm, one had a left arm, and I think they were Jewish.
That might be the exception to the rule. And generally, they're a treifa and they won't live. I mean, I think that's the bigger issue. So the havamim would be that he maybe died within 30 days, the person would still be chayav. And then we say no, that it has to be podot de b'chor adam. Ach teaches you that they have to be alive and they have to be able to live. So I would have thought here you have a treifa and it won't live. They'd be patur. And he says no, but here is an exceptional case because it focused on the heads. And head count is the important aspect of pigeon b'chor. Amar mar, yadcha zu kiboret. We just did that before as the bicep. Minolan, how do you know that? Tatamar about yadcha zu gova shibayad. This is the high point of the yad. The high point of the yad, meaning the bicep, where the bicep peaks. That would be the head. Ata omer zu gova shibayad. O eno ela yadcha mamash. How do you know that it's not on your hand? How do you know that it's on the high point of the arm and not on your, literally, your hand, the palm of your hand? It says, well, Amra Torah, Nacht Tefillin B'Yad, Nacht Tefillin B'Rosh. or instructions to put tefillin on our yad and on tefillin rosh. Malahalam begova shibarosh. Just like the tefillin shirosh, we do it at the peak or the high point of the rosh. Avkan begova shibiyad. You don't need it. Here omer bayu the chol oat. It'll be for you an oat. B'chol oat v'lo la'achirim li'ot. It should be a siman or a sign for you and not for others. Well, if you wear it on the palm of your hand, everybody sees it. If you wear it up by your bicep, that's an area that is normally covered, and therefore people will not see it. Rabbi Yitzchak omer, eino tzarich. Hari omer, samtem et dvarai eila al levavchem ukshartem. Shetei sima keneged alev. This is what we discussed before, that the placement should be opposite the heart. Alright, so now, Mar says, Rechiav Ravacha Bredi Ravavya Mekavein Umanaklu Lahadei Libet. They were Mekavein to place it opposite the heart. So now, Rav Ashi Havayatib Kameda Memer Abit Syria Biyadei. He was holding his tefillin in his hand. Vekamit Chazin Tefillin. I'm sorry, Abit Syria Biyadei. He had a wound on his arm, and they could see his tefillin. He was wearing his tefillin up on his kiboret, but his shirt was ripped, and because of, it was ripped intentionally to allow for room for the wound, so it wouldn't affect the wound over there. And because of that, his tefillin were visible. So he questioned Rav Ashi, well, don't you hold of the din that it has to be for you an oath, not for other people? That the din is to place it in the makom, the place which is generally a private place, and not an oath for others. But that doesn't mean that it can't be an oath for others. So that would bring us down to the halacha. This idea of v'chala oath and not achim oath doesn't mean that it has to be covered necessarily. It means that it has to be in the place that is normally covered. So it's brought down in halacha. Many of the achronim suggest, like Magen Avraham and others suggest, that it's proper to cover over the tefillin. It's just in these cases where you can't cover it over, it's not covered over, then that's okay also, because that's been the makom of the chalaot. But you should try the chatchila to cover over the tefillin. There are others, like the Shulchan Aruch, who says it's lo malav lo morid. Whether it's open or closed, it makes no difference. The chalaot is all about placement. So that question about here, what Rav Ashi says, is the chalaot all about placement? Or is the chalaot also an indication? Yes, it's about placement, and in extenuating circumstances it can be open, but generally it should be in a place that's covered, and it should be covered. But the din that everybody agrees with is that you shouldn't put it above the beged. Because you can't put your tefillin on top of your beged, both because of chatzitza and also because then it's clear that it's not an oath for you, but an oath for others if it's above the beged.
The beged,
right?
It does not.
That doesn't have impact, right? It's the part up top, the bayit itself that we're referencing over here.
And you
rosh? Yeah. Okay, the rosh has to be seen. That's the next Gemara over here. Right. Well, that's what we learned yesterday. Rabbi Elazar Gadol says that people will see the tefillin shorosh on you and Ve'yaru Mimecha. How do we know it's not about tefillin shorosh? Because it's the one that's visible. What's the one that's visible? That's the tefillin shorosh. Itmar, go over shorosh minyal. And we took it for granted that you placed the tefillin on the high point of the head. How do you know that? Talmud Rabbanan, Benei Necha Zugova shorosh. Is that the high point of the head? Ata Omer Zugova shorosh. Or Enuela Benei Necha. Or maybe it literally means between your eyes. Mamash. Never come ben enecha ben erel alan lo tasimu korcha ben enechem the mate. You're not allowed to make cuts for a mate between your eyes. Mala halam begova shorosh. Over there, that's a place where there is sear, where there's hair. Also over here, afkan gova shorosh makom shosek karcha. The place that you would do a karcha, this practice of cutting oneself over a mate, was done when there was hair there. So when it has hair there, that's the location for where you put the tefillin. So that's where we get the hairline as being the front end of the tefillin. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Tzarich. Amar Torah Anach Tefillin Biyad Anach Tefillin Berosh. Mal Alam B'Makom Aro'ui L'Tamei B'Nega Echad. Avkan B'Makom Aro'ui L'Tamei B'Nega Echad. Just like when you place the tefillin on the Yad, that's a place where you can only have one type of Nega. That's called Nega Or Abasar. That's a regular type of Nega that you can have, a regular type of Tzarat. On the other hand, if you place your tefillin ben enecha actually has two different locations of a nega. There's a separate type of nega, a nega of the hair, se'ar and zakan, of the beard and the hair. So the beard and the hair have a different nega in a place where there is hair, or normally is hair in that area. In those areas, the nega has a different din than nega or abasar. If you were to place the tefillin ben enecha, the tefillin would sit on two areas where there's a nega. It would sit on your eyebrows, which have a din of nega of se'ar and zakan. And if you the area between the eyes, which is skin, would have a din of nega or abasar. So that difference would be that the tefillin are sitting on two locations of negaim, and they have a difference in halacha. For instance, the siman tuma by a nega or a basar is sehar lavan, whereas by the nega of the zakan and the hair, it's sehar tzahov. is a siman tuma. So they have different halachot, and because of that, he says, just like on the arm, it's an obligation where there's only one type of nega, so to over here, you have to place the tefillin where there's only one type of nega, so that would be up at the top, where it's seyar, when you're totally on the seyar, and not in anywhere that is considered to be skin. Although, you could have argued that it should be on the forehead, where it's nega or a basar, and that's only one nega. Maybe they felt there wasn't enough room there in the forehead space, but here we're talking about gova arosh, and it should be up on top of the hairline. Lafuke ben enecha, to exclude ben enecha, dika basar viseyar, that has both types of negaim there. Dika seyar lavan, mika nami seyar tzahov. It has two different dinim of tuma, seyar lavan and seyar tzahov is the difference between a nega that deals with seyar tzahov and seyar lavan. So just to finish up, to complete the last process, is the yud on the tefillin shel yad, the knot of the yud shel tefillin shel yad. There we said yesterday that the knot, the kesher, should be lamala. So the kesher should be lamala. Some people learn that again. We talked about the kesher tefillin shel rosh, that should be up above the area of the oref, that it should be up by the end of the skull bone. But also they apply it to the tefillin shel yad. By the tefillin shel yad, they say that the yud should be lamala. It should be up against the bayit. It should be all the way up against the bayit, because it should be lamala, samud, to the bayit. That's number one. Number two is here, when we say that it should be keneged halev, what are we referring to? Are we referring to the fact that the bayit should be keneged halev, or should the kesher shel yud be keneged halev? So many of the Rishonim say that it means it's referring to the yud. The kesher shel yud should be keneged halev. How do you know which side to put the kesher shel yud on? You put it on the side that faces the heart. So therefore, for a righty, it's on the inside of the tefillin, on the right side of their tefillin. For a lefty, the kesher shel yud will be on the opposite side. The kesher shel yud will be on the inside, meaning on the left side of their tefillin, in order that it be facing towards the lev. We do both. We have the kesher shel yud facing in towards the lev, plus we tilt slightly the tefillin towards the lev. It should be very slight. It shouldn't be so much. They tilt the tefillin slightly towards the lev when we put them on the yad. It also comes up when someone forgot their tefillin, the lefty forgets tefillin, and he has to borrow tefillin from a righty. If he borrows the tefillin from a righty, how should he put them on? Mishnah Berurah paskins that when you put on the tefillin, it's more important to have the kesher shel yud be on the inside than it is to have the tefillin be right side up. And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah says one should invert the tefillin, should flip them around and put them on upside down, meaning that the titura will be on the bottom rather than the top, in order that the kesher shel yud should be towards the lev. Better to do that, even though the batim will be backwards, even though the parshiot will be backwards. So that's another din of keneged halev. This din of keneged halev applies to the yud and applies to the tefillin, but it so much so applies to the kesher shel yud that the Mishnah Berurah paskins that you flip the tefillin over and put them on backwards in order to ensure that the yud should be on the inside rather than on the outside. Arba tzitziot makvot zu etzu. The four tzitziot are makvot zu etzu. Shabbatah mitzvah achat, the one mitzvah. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees. Reason says there are four different mitzvot. My benayot, what's the nafkamina between them? Amar Rav Yosef sadin b'tzitzit eke benayot. Wearing, if you have a linen beged and you're putting on, you have to put on for tchelet, you have to put on woolen tzitzit, which is kilayim. So we're matir kilayim when you're doing the mitzvot tzitzit. What happens if you only have one corner full of strings? According to Rabbi Shmuel, that's permitted. You can have that kilayim because you're mekayim the mitzvah. According to the Chachamim, you only mekayim the mitzvah, you have all four of them. If you have less than four, you're not mekayim the mitzvah and you're over on kilayim. So that's one nafkamina between them. Next, Rav Barahina Amar Talit Balat Chamei. A five-cornered beged is also an afkamina between them. According to the Chachamim, let's say the mitzvah is four. It's four no matter how many corners there are. You got to put it on four corners and that's it. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's a corner-based mitzvah. Each corner is a mitzvah. Then if you have five corners, you have to place on five tzitziot, not four tzitziot. So that's an afkamina between them. Ravina amar de Ravuna ike benayot. This din of Ravuna is between them. Da'am Ravuna yotzei betalit shenim tzitziot ke yolchata b'shabbat chayav chatat. Someone who goes out on Shabbos without a properly tied tzitzit on their beged on Shabbos is chayav chatat, because they're carrying the strings on the beged, unless they're mimikayim the mitzvah, they are a masui. They're unnecessary carrying. So that any mitzvah doesn't have all four corners on it. According to Rabbi Shmuel, each corner is a mitzvah in itself. Therefore, if you have one corner on, you're okay, because that's not called a masui. You're mimikayim a mitzvah. According to Chachamim, if you have less than four corners put on, all those tzitziot will be considered to be classified as being carried on Shabbos, because they're not mimikayim the mitzvah. That's why the friskers were very makpid, and they'd only wear a beged that was the size of the chazanish tzitzit, because they wanted to ensure that it was real tzitzit midoraita when they went out into a shuta rabim, because they felt that if the beged was smaller and it really wasn't the din of tzitzit in the beged, then you would be chayav for masui and Shabbos, because it's not really being mekayim the mitzvah of tzitzit. Right, so now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Shisha Brei Rabidi, I'm on the butzrei v'limei, someone who cut his corner off of his beged, lo'abi lo'kum, he then poked himself from tzitzit because he was shav yatalit balat chamesh. He just made it into a five-cornered beggar now instead of a four-cornered. corner beggar. That's only if he cuts on a like 45 degree angle and he leaves corners there. If you really want to be potur, you have to round the corners. If you round the corners, then you would be possibly potur mitzitzit by taking out the squareness of the corner and by rounding it out. Amar Rav Moshe Asher, I'm on the tsairi livume. Someone who tsairi knots their beggar up. Person who folded up his clothing, ma'avid below klum. So Rashi here brings down two interpretations. Only one of them is found in Rashi. The Shittim Gubetzit has the other lashon. Here, batsri means that he tied up his beged. It was too long, and he tied it up. So Rashi says, the first lashon he brings, he's tied up the entire beged. The other lashon is that he tied up the corner. And the Shittim Gubetzit favors that, and so does Tosos favors that interpretation. It's talking about the corner here. Lo'avid below klum, again, didn't do anything. My time with Gamand Shari Yadami. It's as if it's been released. Because the knot, since in the end the knot will become undone, then when you fold it up, it does nothing to change where the location of the corners is or the corner itself. But it's not Nami. And we have another Mishnah that suggests the same thing. Kochamotot, Asrorot, all flasks that are tied up, Tehorot. They are Tehor because they're not classified to be a Beit Kibul, because the underlying assumption is that they will be untied again. Chutz Mishel Aravim, the Arabs' flasks that they tied, that was the normal way they did it, and they tied it in such a manner that it never came undone. Amrav Dimi Minardo, Haiman Dechaiti, the Glimim, one, someone who stitches up their beged. Again, either according to Rashi, flip the whole beged up and stitch it, or according to the Shittim Gubetzit, the Tosfot in the second Lashon Rashi, that they folded up the corner and stitched it. Lo'avid below klum, he didn't do anything. Because im ita delomi baile lifsek velishdei. Because if he really didn't need it, he would have cut it off. The fact that he's stitching it up is an indication that he eventually will release it. And the fact that he didn't cut it, and he did stitch it up, we eventually believe that it will be undone. If it will be undone, then either according to Rashi's first interpretation, the corners are really the end of the beged, not where the fold is. According to the other interpretation, where it's a fold, he's changed the corner, made the new corners. It's five corners here on the angle, instead of the original corner where the tzitzis should be. So all of these issues here, the Gemara says, do not help in terms of changing, either making the tzitzis patur, or in terms of changing where the corner locations are, because eventually they will all be opened up, they will all be undone. All right, now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Shmuel, Mer Rabbatana Bar Mitzvot. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel, Locha, Ki Rabbi Shmuel. Locha is like Rabbi Shmuel, Velayt, Hilchot Kavatein. Locha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, Mer Shmuel, says it's like Rabbi Shmuel, but rather like the Chachamim, that the Arba Mitzitzit are all one mitzvah. Ravina Abba Ka'azel, Batre, the Bar Mar Bar Vashi, was walking behind him, Bishabto de Riglo. And the Shabbos of it's before the Regel, like this, it's in Yonu Dioma, Shabbos of Godol. That's what we're talking about. If Sikkarna de Chute, one of his Tzitzit broke off, Velo Amarle, Velo Mide, and he didn't say anything. Kadmato the Beit. He says, all the way back there, it broke. If you told me over there, I would have taken it off. He says, that it's inappropriate for you. You're going to have to strip your beged off in the middle of the street. That's inappropriate. So Targumur Rav Bar Shava Kamed Rav Kana Bilav to Lotosur. That's only in a din that is Lotosur can go until Tul Isra Midar Abonon. When do we say Kvod Abriot is Doche a mitzvah? That's when we're talking about a din derabonan. In a din derabonan, kvod abirot is gover. It wins out. But it doesn't win out when we're talking about an issu d'oraita. Here I'm walking out in Rishut Rabim. It's an issu d'oraita involved here. The mayor should take it off. Some people say, that's what he said to him. Ramalei, matatik. The mishdei, that he told him. Out in the street, he told him about it. And he responded to him and said, Mar Barbash said to him, what do you want me to do? Take it off right now? Ramar, kvod kvod abirot should doch lo tesesh v'torah. V'hartar gemua. He says, but then already, Rav Barshab Hachanami, so he says in this case also, it was a Karmelit Derabbanan. It was a Karmelit Derabbanan, so it was only a location Derabbanan. Since it was a location Derabbanan, then Kavod HaBriyot would have dictated over here. Since the Kavod HaBriyot is Gover, wins out, is the Koveya, when you have an Issur Derabbanan, since it was a Karmelit Derabbanan, he didn't take it off in that location. So that's one of the two answers. Either he already had walked home, he said, if you told me, I would have taken it off, and then he asked him the question about Kavod HaBriyot. Since Kavod HaBriyot only deals with Dinei Derabbanan, but here was a din d'oraita, and maybe he should have taken it off. The second Lashon says that he did tell him on the spot, and yet he didn't take it off, because he continued to walk with it. Why? Because even though, you're right, the Kavod HaBriyot only overcomes an Issur d'Rabbanan, here we were talking about an Issur d'Rabbanan because it was a Karmelit d'Rabbanan. What's interesting here is the Shittim HaKubetzit, and Ot Hei writes something amazing. He writes this. It says, V'im nefsak b'shabat achat min tzitzit. One of tzitzit's nefs on Shabbos. Afagab d'b'chol asur l'lov shol. Even though on chol you cannot wear it, Shabbat mutar lelov show, you can wear it on Shabbos. Shrei kavod abriyot to hold the oath miutaf etalito. Kavod abriyot that he should walk with his clothes on, his shirt, his it. The bechol dafka mar derachmana gedilim tasel lechal arba kavod kutsutcha. Because only on chol is there a din of gedilim tasel lechal arba kavod kutsutcha. Bizman shu barasiya. Because that's the time where you can make the arba kavod. Aba b'shabbat shenu barasiya, enu muzhar. On Shabbos, when there's no din of asiyah, you're not warned. And don't tell me the isser is to wear a, not to wear a beggar that has dalkmo without tzitzit. The isser by tzitzit is not to wear a beggar without tzitzit. No. It's a positive command. If you wear a beggar with Arba Kambod, you must put tzitzit on. The must put on is the asiyah. The asiyah is the mitzvah over here. Element tzuvah asiyah. And since the asiyah is the davar over here, and therefore you can say, so over here you have a mitzvah which can't be accomplished on Shabbos. Since you can't be accomplished on Shabbos, you're patur, he says, from the mitzvah on Shabbos. And therefore, because of kavod habriyot, I'm going to let you wear the beged on Shabbos. So the way Shita Mikubetz explains it, it's unbelievable. It's not just in a case where it was outside and he nifsach achod, he can wear it until he gets home. Here he says, Mikara did. If you have to go outside and this is the beggar that you have, put on a beggar without tzitzit and go out. Because on Shabbos, there's no din of being Mekayim or putting on the tzitzit on Shabbos.
Is that the din that you don't check your talis on Shabbos so that
if you find it?
If you find it, then you won't wear talis on Shabbos. That's not kavod habriyot.
I don't know. I don't like that. I don't know. I don't know about that.
There's such a...
The minhag not to check it? I thought the minhag not probably... If I was just guessing, the minhag not to check it is so you don't come to fix it on Shabbos. If you check and you find something wrong, you're going to end up nodding and fixing it.
I mean, it's not... I didn't just... Not just theorizing about a possible explanation.
Right.
The reason check is... It because...
If you find
that it's wrong, you'll end up not wearing talis and shul, and that's...
Cut it a piece. Okay.
If you don't know, you...
That'd be like the Shittim Kubetzah, that you can put it on.
Right, exactly. So money is that only according to Shittim Kubetzah, or other people do that too, since...
Right.
Anyway, look, I mean, how often is it not good? Yeah, I mean, you've got a ruba, the ruba, the ruba.
Yeah, although it's a chazot of the Ne'adam, we don't take it. You have to check it every day, your talis, so it's really not... doesn't have a do.